Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Horror, Wine, and Crime. You're back with KK and Lo for another crazy episode. How's it going, Lo?
It is going. It's Tuesday, and it's already starting to get dark, and it's only 6:30.
It's so depressing, honestly.
But yeah, you can't see, but I got my, I'm already prepping for it. Freezing season. I already got the hoodie on.
It dropped down
to like 45 today.
I know. That's when you know when I can tell that it's just like truly starting to change. I go from having an iced coffee in the morning to having a hot coffee.
I know, right?
You just need it when on those cold mornings when you just don't want to get out of bed. It's like, okay, I need a hot cup of coffee to flow through my bloodstream.
Absolutely. And then you drink it on the way. So then I have another drink. I've been buying the Starbucks refreshers, well, it's not Starbucks brand, but I think it's that iced brand, you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. I like those.
Yeah. So I've been buying the refreshers, and I make it like the Starbucks, pour it over ice, add some creamer in it, mix it up, you're good to go. So, like, I feel like I'm those TikTok ladies that are getting attacked. Like, do you really need all those drinks? I'm like, well, that's my coffee. Well, then what's that one? Well, that's my refresher. Okay.
I did not know people were getting attacked for this.
I need my ice water, and they're carrying like four different cups in their car.
Dude, that is me. I mean, I work from home, but like my desk is constantly filled with drinks. I'm constantly having different drinks throughout the entire day. You just need it.
I need my ice water, and then I need, what's that? Well, I have a Coke Zero because I need some extra caffeine through the day, and I'm just like, oh my god,
no,
like I feel attacked.
I did not know people were getting hate for this, because yeah, I'm fully in it with you. Like right now I have two drinks with me, not so crazy, but I have two. I have my water, and then I have an energy drink.
Yeah, my
what'd you say?
My sink right now, after I were done, I have to go take care of some stuff, because I got like all my little cups of straws that, of course, because, you know, the ones that I like are, none of them are dishwasher safe, you know?
Oh, of course. I hate
that. I have to hand wash them all. So there's a few of them in there that I got to get to washing.
I feel like I've truly become so lazy with how easy technology and society makes things that, like, when I have, like, a cup that's hand wash only, I, like, grunt. I'm like, ugh. Like, I'm like, I have to hand wash this. I can't just throw it in my dishwasher.
You become so entitled as adults. And not like fancy shit, just convenient shit.
Yes, it's actually so bad. Like, my grandparents would be ashamed if they knew that about me. Because anytime when I was a kid and I would complain about anything, you'd always get the story of, like, I had to walk 6 miles in the snow to get to school.
But one of my clients told me that hand washing dishes helps your nails grow.
Really? I've heard the opposite.
Yeah, I don't know. She told me, I don't know if it's the, like, the dish soap in the hot water or like what it is, but she said washing dishes makes your nails grow faster.
Interesting. I did not know that.
Mm-hmm. So I'm
like, I need that, because my nails are easily broken. That's how they are. Especially when I was working with Lo, guys, my nails were constantly, which, like, yes, I would wear gloves, like, when I would clean toilets and stuff. But when I'm, like, was cleaning, like, counters and, like, other stuff, like, I really didn't wear gloves, so
Well, that's what you got to do, the scraping, you know, the dried ketchup that they left down there.
Yeah, or
the
exactly.
Sticky morning syrup that they left, you know.
Exactly. If you know, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, my nails definitely took a beating from that.
But she got out, man. She got out alive. Some of us, we're still trying. We're clawing our way out. We're close.
You're getting there. But now I just have you wouldn't think, but I get back problems from sitting in a chair all day. So, you know, pros and cons to everything, right?
Yeah, you know, back pain or arthritis. I mean, take your pick.
Right. Oh my gosh. Well, Lo, I don't know if you have anything else.
No, we're going to let you get right into the local news story, and then you can get into the meat, the grind, the center cut of the story.
Tonight. Yes, we have to do the meat reference.
Does that sound juicy enough? Center cut.
Juicy and ready. But never mind, that sounds weird. I'm debating if I leave that in or not.
That's another podcast we're working on. We haven't released it yet. We'll let you guys know.
Oh, TBD. Gosh. Just ignore that last comment. I just meant like the meat. Okay, anyways. Moving on.
Yeah, you're getting better.
Ay-yi-yi. Okay, so yes. Local news story, which actually this did make national news just because it was so crazy. But right here in Michigan, in Oakland County, there were a couple of men caught on a doorbell camera. I'm assuming a Ring camera. They were posing as utility workers, so DTE workers. And they ended up going into this elderly couple's home, robbing them, murdering the husband, and injuring the wife. So super scary, crazy story here.
And it's out of Rochester Hills, which is the next city over from where I live.
Right. I mean, and if you're not from Michigan or you're not even from this area of Michigan, you might not know. Very, very nice area. Like super nice, you know, pretty safe in regards to like crime issues and stuff. Just not a place you would fully expect this to happen. I mean, I guess if they're robbing somebody, perhaps, because from the house that I saw on the news, it looked like a very nice home. So yeah, just sad and goes to show that this can happen anywhere. So just honestly, it's so sad, but nowadays you just have to take precaution with literally everybody, because somebody could seem like the nicest, most genuine person, and they could honestly just be out to get you and be like horrible. So police found the 72-year-old homeowner's body in the basement. There were gruesome nature of injuries, police said, and his wife was allegedly tied up, and she had to tell them where the valuables were in their house. Now, it actually took the suspects 2 days to gain entry into the home of 72-year-old Hussein Murray and Linda Murray after the couple cautiously turned them away the first time that they showed up at their door, claiming to be from the gas company, saying that they were looking to investigate a leak. So they did turn them away the first time, and then they came back the next day. Oakland County Sheriff Mike Rochard told the Detroit News that it is his belief that the suspects likely followed Hussein home from this local jewelry store that he owns, because police believe that it was a targeted attempt to rob him in his upscale home. So two men have now been arrested in association with this crime after they were captured on the home doorbell camera. They were wearing, you know, they looked like they were working. It looked legit. You know, they had clipboards with paperwork and everything. They had like fake ID cards, like for their credentials. They were wearing like the fluorescent vests and a fake like DTE energy brandishing on them. So it looked very believable that they actually did work for DTE. But they obviously did not. And the two men that were seen on the footage are believed to be the only ones involved. So the first guy, Carlos Hernandez, he is 37. He was picked up on Saturday in Shreveport, Louisiana. So he made it pretty far right after the crimes. Clearly he fled right after they did it. And he was charged the following day with felony murder and two counts of unlawful imprisonment. He also was booked for multiple warrants out of Ohio for previous armed robbery. He was reported to the Caddo Correction Center, according to an arrest statement from that office in Shreveport, Louisiana. So he is currently being held at the Caddo County Jail.
Which I wonder, because they said that they called the Louisiana Police Department and said, you know, like, hey, he's coming through. And I wonder how they knew that he was headed to Louisiana.
I know. I am so curious. I haven't seen details on how they actually caught him. Like, I don't know if they, if like the story went, you know, obviously viral or whatever, and people saw the video, and then maybe someone made a call and was like, hey, I seen this guy. He looks just like the guy from the video. So maybe that's how they kind of traced him down.
Maybe, but when I saw the video clip of the sheriff Bouchard talking, and he said he was making his way to Louisiana. We called and gave them a heads up so they knew he was, you know, coming through there. So I'm wondering if he was from there, like, originally.
Oh, you know what? He might have been.
Or why they picked Louisiana, you know. Like, obviously, if he had warrants in Ohio, he wasn't going to stop there. You know, he was going to keep going.
But, right. That is super interesting, like, how, like, you're right, how that they knew Louisiana was the place that he was heading. Unless they got a tip or something. But, yeah, I haven't heard anything in regards to that.
And this poor guy, the one that was murdered, he was shot like back in the 70s because he owns a jewelry store in Detroit or wherever it was from. And he was shot during a robbery there. And then this happens to him. I'm like, come on.
Lightning's not supposed to sad.
Strike twice. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So,
and he's not doing anything wrong.
And the fact that they left and then came back. So, you know, they couldn't get into that house, but they were persistent about getting into that particular house, obviously. So I wonder if they knew, like, this guy owns a jewelry store, this is his house, you know, and connected it. Because to me, that seems kind of weird. Like, if the lady was like, oh, no, you're not coming in, thank you, blah, blah, blah. And then to come back a day or two later to the exact same house, like, I feel like there was something they were looking for in that house.
Oh, absolutely. Like, I don't have a doubt in my mind that they knew that this guy owned a jewelry store. Because there are, if they wanted to target, like, Rochester Hills or, like, a rich area or something, there are so many big, nice houses that, like you said, if they were turned away the first time, like, why would they just not go to another house? So, yeah, I fully believe that they knew about this guy's jewelry store and all that. And it's just so sad, yeah, because, like, the guy, he just owns a jewelry store. He's not a bad guy. He's not doing anything wrong. And it's just, like, people just see the jewels and the diamonds and lose their freaking minds, apparently.
And then, of course, his poor wife, she's, you know, going to be probably scared for the rest of her life, you know.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, she'll be terrified. I mean, now her husband's dead and it's like, what is she supposed to do? I mean, be in this big house by herself.
Yeah. And so she's in the 70s. So I'm sure she's taken care of, like, financially, but
yeah,
emotionally, like, you were tied up while your husband was murdered and robbed, and you're in your 80s, like 70s, 80s. Like, to me, I feel like she's going to need some family supporting her for a while.
Yeah, I hope she has a big support system, because that's just a lot.
Absolutely. I would sell it and just go get me a little condo somewhere and just.
Yeah, honestly, if she's right, I don't know how old she is, but if she's, I'm assuming she's old enough to live in like a senior community so that she's around other people constantly and in a little bit of a safer environment. I that's what I would do. But maybe she has family that she can stay with too, because yeah, that's just, that's rough.
So our prayers go out to the family.
Definitely. So yeah, they caught the first guy. And then the second suspect, he has not yet been identified, like publicly. He was taken into custody on Monday, according to the Oakland County Sheriff's Office in a Facebook post. And the department's fugitive apprehension team found him in Plymouth Township. So he definitely did not get like even close to as far as the other guy. And he was apprehended without incident per the release. So yeah, the first time they went there was on a Thursday night at approximately 10 p.m. Like I said, claiming they were with DTE, responding to a gas leak. And they didn't allow them access into the house. So then they came back at 10 a.m. the following morning. This time they had fake DTE paperwork with them. So the first time they did not. They arrived in a white pickup truck with a DTE sign on its side and orange traffic cones in the bed. And this time they were allowed inside. With Hussein Murray taking them into the basement. It's so crazy how legit they made this look. Like, they were scarily dedicated to committing this crime.
That's what makes me think there was, this house was targeted.
Oh, absolutely. It's just, like, so scary, too, because, like, you know, if somebody knocked on my door and they had a DTE sign on their car, they had paperwork, they had badges, they had the whole uniform with, like, the embroidery on it, I would for sure be like, oh, well, yeah, duh, they're obviously from DTE, like, just because of how legit they made it look.
Right.
So when the two men came back upstairs from the basement, it was without Hussein, because obviously they had murdered him down in the basement. They then proceeded to ask Linda where the jewelry and money were in the house. And they also bounded her wrists and ankles with duct tape. The prosecutor's office said they hit her across the face anytime that she attempted to scream. After the men left, Linda was able to free herself and call 911. According to the responding officers from Oakland County, they said that they found his body in the basement, and because of the gruesome nature of the injuries, it was not immediately clear if he had been shot or just bludgeoned to death. I guess it was that, you know, intense and, like, gruesome of a look that they could not tell just upon looking at him, which is so sad. And then, obviously, they were able to obtain the Ring camera video footage of the suspects at their door, and they decided to release the footage to the public as obviously part of an effort to find these two guys. So yeah, DTE made a statement, you know, saying their hearts go out to the victims, and obviously made a statement saying, if anybody comes to your door, don't just, like, let anybody in, like, be 100% sure that they work for our company. So yeah, super sad and scary incident that happened. I just have to wonder, like, how many times, I know there's, like, so many cases of fake salespeople or, like, fake workers coming to people's doors and claiming, you know, oh, we have to come look at this thing, or, oh, we want to sell you this thing. And then they make their way into the house and then they either rob you or kill you. And it's just really sad.
It's even people, like, who get the fake cop cars and fake IDs and they pull you over and they're not even really a cop.
Right. It's like, it's so crazy because so many people would be confused. I'm sure I might be confused in, like, a situation like that, thinking that it's legit and, like, not thinking that somebody's there to kill me. Like, they're just workers or whatever.
Right.
But yeah, so just goes to show, I guess you have to pay extra attention, and not trust anybody, because clearly people take advantage of everything and try to trick trick people. But now on to, as Lo says, the meat of the story for today. we are talking about the case of Cassie Jo Stoddart. And kind of a little hint into the story. Let's just say the movie Scream heavily influenced the case today. Yeah. So Cassie was born on December 21st, 1989. She had two siblings, a younger brother and an older sister, and they lived in Pocatello, Idaho. Now, Pocatello is, it's mainly like a Mormon town. It's pretty small. It's in southeast Idaho. It's just pretty, you know, plain and simple, small town, felt pretty safe, and everybody kind of minded their own business. Most of her childhood, Cassie, her sister, and her brother lived with her grandparents. They're still really close with their mother, but just, I guess, situational-wise, it was just a better thing for them to live with their grandparents. So this happened in the fall of 2006. Cassie was 16 years old. She was a junior in high school. She had a boyfriend. His name was Matt. And they went to school together. And at this point, they had been together for about 5 months. They spent a lot of time at his house or a lot of time hanging out at Cassie's house. You know, they were just young teenagers in their like new relationship, hanging out literally all the time. And Cassie was a super, you know, good teenager. She had good grades. She was well behaved. She was even really determined to buy her own car. So during the summertime, she would babysit. You know, she just wanted to show that she was responsible. And at one point, her uncle and aunt, they lived pretty close by her. She had cousins too. So she would go over there and like babysit her younger cousins all the time just to make some extra money. So like I said, she was saving because she wanted to get her own car. Obviously, she's 16. Most 16-year-olds like want to buy their own car. So any opportunity that she would get to make money, she would take. One time, her uncle Frank and her aunt Allison asked her if she would house and pet sit for them because they were going out of town. And yeah, they were offering her some extra money. So obviously, Cassie said yes because that was like her main priority at that point. She thought, you know, oh, I'll make some extra money and I get to hang out at this big house by myself because they had a really big home. And Cassie also just wanted to prove that she was responsible and could take this on. So it was just kind of like the perfect opportunity. So the weekend of September 20th, Cassie's mom drove her up to the house, and it was on Whispering Cliffs Drive, which where this was at was kind of like a little creepy, I guess, just because it was in a super remote area. It was a really big house. There weren't many other houses super close to it. you know, there were neighbors, but they were really spread out.
Whispers.
Yeah, exactly. Gives me like When a Stranger Calls vibes too.
Have you checked the children?
But yeah, she was mainly there just to take care of and watch and feed the animals. They had three cats and two dogs while the family was away. So like I said, Cassie was really responsible and she asked for permission from her aunt Allison if it was okay that her boyfriend Matt come over and hang out with her. You know, she was a good kid. She didn't drink. She didn't do drugs. She was a straight A student. She was very responsible. And, you know, they knew that they didn't have anything to worry about while she was at their house. Like, they knew she wasn't going to, like, throw some crazy party or anything. So they said, yeah, your boyfriend can come over. That's not a problem. So Matt came over that night. It was Friday night. Cassie and Matt were at the home, and they were just hanging out. And they were, like, figuring out if they were going to watch a movie or whatever they were going to do. Bon, but then Matt... What'd you say?
I said, or boom, chicka, boom, boom.
Right. Well, Matt had a different idea because he invited his two friends over, Brian and Tori. I know. So the two boys came over and they decided to have like a movie night. So nothing crazy. They were still just going to watch a movie and hang out. They were all somewhat friends. Like, they went to the same high school together and they knew each other. But Cassie wasn't really too happy about it because she only got permission from her aunt about Matt coming over, and like, she didn't ask if these other people could come over. So she was a little bit upset with Matt, you know, why are you inviting these other people over? I just asked if you can come over. I would probably be a little bit annoyed too if I was her.
Oh, same.
I like, because it's her aunt and uncle's house that she's watching and he's just inviting these two guys over. But Matt assured her that it was fine. He's like, we're just going to hang out. You know, we're just going to watch a movie. We're not doing anything crazy, so it'll be fine. So all the guys and Cassie are hanging out at the house. They start to watch a movie. And Tori and Brian are not into it. They're like, this is lame. They thought that it was going to be like a party. And obviously there was no party going on. So they told them, we're just going to go to the movie theater. Because we'd rather go out and see a movie than just like stay here. So Tori and Brian tell Cassie and Matt that they're going to go to the movies instead and watch something that's new out in the theater. So Cassie was fine with that because she's like, whatever, I'd rather hang out with my boyfriend, you know, by myself instead of with these guys there. So about 15 minutes after Tori and Brian left the house, the power went out at the house, like while Cassie and Matt were watching a movie. It just like completely went out. So Cassie was a little, you know, freaked out. She's kind of feeling uneasy and just a little bit scared. And I get it. I would be too. They're in this like big house. She's 16 and like she's supposed to stay there by herself at night. and instead of trying to find the circuit box or anything, they just decide to stay in the living room and like wait it out. So Matt was trying to calm Cassie down and he's just like, don't worry, it's fine. It's just the power. Like, it's not a big deal. It'll probably come back on. And after a few minutes, some of the power does come back on. Not all of it, just like certain areas. So like half of the lights were back on. So it was like a little bit better because it wasn't complete darkness. So Cassie's still kind of freaked out though because she's supposed to stay there by herself. And Matt calls his mom and he's like, hey, can I stay the night here with Cassie? She's afraid to be by herself alone in the house. Because Cassie just wanted him to stay because she was a little bit freaked out with everything. And Matt's mom obviously was like, no, you're 16. You're not staying alone with your girlfriend in this house. So also, according to Matt, one of the dogs that was in the house, apparently he was hanging out in front of the basement stairs, which were in the kitchen, and this dog was just like staring at the stairs and was barking. And then he would come back to the living room where Matt and Cassie were, and then he would go back to the stairs and start barking. Matt said that made him feel pretty uncomfortable, but like he didn't really think to investigate it further. I think he was probably just a little too like scared. Like, he probably didn't want to admit that he was scared, but you know, the power keeps going out and like the dog's barking at the stairs, I would definitely be freaked out.
Yeah, there's definitely some kind of situation happening.
Right. So 11 p.m. rolls around and Matt's mom comes to the house to pick him up at the home. He asks his mom one more time if he could stay the night there with Cassie. He explained to her, you know, nothing crazy's happening. He's like, it's just the lights are going off and she's just feeling really scared. So I just want to stay here with her. But Matt's mom said no again. But she did say, Cassie can come stay the night at our house and I'll drive her back in the morning. That would be fine. So, you know, Matt goes to Cassie and he's like, hey, do you want to stay the night at my house? You know, my mom's there. And she said that that would be okay. But Cassie declined. You know, she, like I said, was a really good kid. And she said, no, it's my responsibility to stay here tonight to watch the animals. And I'm being paid to house it. So I just feel like I need to stay here. You know, she didn't want to break her promise of staying there and watching the animals. So, you know, she's brushing it off, trying to be like, it's fine. It's not a big deal. I'll be okay. So a few minutes later, after Matt has left, Cassie just goes back into the living room. She's laying on the couch. You know, she's like watching movies by herself, just trying to calm down and be like, it's fine. I'm just going to have a movie night. But then the lights in the home, they're flickering on and off again. And to my understanding, it's not like storming out or anything. So it's not like, oh, the power's a little like finicky because of like the storms. Like, no, the lights just keep doing this by themselves. Then eventually they just completely go out. Like there's no power. So she's just like in the complete darkness. She's obviously feeling really scared. And instead of getting up and like investigating the situation, she just decides that she's going to sit on the living room couch. Like, because she doesn't know what to do. I don't blame her. Like when you're really scared, like you kind of get frozen. I feel like she probably just like froze on the couch because she was like, it's probably just the power. There's probably nothing happening. And like she probably didn't want to walk around the house in the dark.
It's kind of like the whole theory, if you put the blankets over your head, that the ghost won't see you.
Yes, exactly. So now it's 2 days later. And Cassie's aunt and uncle and her cousin come home from their trip. Cassie's 13-year-old cousin went into the home first. And as she's like going up to the door, she notices that it's unlocked, which is super weird because their doors are usually always locked. But it wasn't. It was open. So she's like, okay, this is weird. But, you know, maybe she thinks like maybe Cassie just like left it unlocked or whatever. So she walks into the house and then she walks into the living room, and that's where she found Cassie stabbed to death in a pool of blood in the living room on the floor. So her cousin screams and her family runs in once they obviously heard her screaming. And of course, they all just lost it. They called the police and police investigators came immediately out to the home.
Oh my God, 13, the poor girl had to find that.
I know, how traumatizing. So the county sheriff's office, they actually put the family up in a hotel for like 2 weeks during the investigation. Probably, you know, to give them, they probably didn't want to stay in the house, honestly, anyways. And they wanted to do investigating, so it was probably like a win-win situation. And investigators did determine that Cassie had been there for a few days. So they were thinking she obviously got killed the first like night that she was there.
I mean, I know she was house sitting, but when her parents didn't hear from her, like, because she's only 16, so you would feel like somebody would have went and checked in on her a little bit sooner.
Right, right. And yeah, I don't know about anything like that, like, or even her grandparents, because she lived with her grandparents, but maybe they just didn't think anything of it. I'm not really sure. But yeah, you would think somebody would be like, why, where is she? Like, why has she not been like calling or answering the phone?
I mean, I know they didn't have cell phones back then, but you'd still think at 16, like, hey, check in the morning, check in at night, you know?
Right. Well, and even, later too, we'll hear Matt says that he tried to get a hold of her and she was not answering the phone. So he didn't really know why, but he tried, but like he didn't really incur further than that, apparently. But yeah, we'll get into that too. They also determined that it was not a robbery because nothing from the home was taken. Like all of their expensive jewelry, their TVs, DVD players, all the fancy things, they were still in the home. Everything looked undisturbed. Nothing was like shuffled around. So there were literally no signs of breaking in. So they believed that whoever came in the house, Cassie must have known them or let them in willingly or was just someone that was familiar with the house. Now, later, the autopsy revealed that Cassie had been stabbed approximately 30 times, with 9 to 12 of those stabbings being fatal.
Oh my God. Overkill. Mm-hmm.
Very much so. So it definitely seemed like a very personal attack by someone that she probably knew, or someone that was just close to her, because it, you know, when it's like a stabbing situation like that where it's 30 times, it seems pretty personal.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. So investigators first obviously went to go see Cassie's boyfriend Matt, since he was the last person to see her, and he was her boyfriend. So right off the bat, they thought Matt was a suspect. Investigators found him to be kind of suspicious because when they were asking him questions about Cassie, he didn't like show any emotion. He didn't cry, and he didn't necessarily seem too shocked that she had been killed. He was just kind of like blank. So they thought that that was very strange, that he didn't show any type of emotion, especially because of just how horrifying the whole scene was. And also, this was his girlfriend. And he was just at the house. Like, if he did end up staying there, it could have been him too. So they just expected a little bit more emotion from Matt. So that kind of made them raise their eyebrows a little bit. But at the same time, if you look at it too, like, he might have been in shock. And I feel like people deal with shock in different ways. Like, he might have been so in shock that he just couldn't really emote anything, any stress or any like outright crazy emotion.
But I was gonna say, they always say you never know how you're gonna take trauma until it happens.
Exactly. And everyone has different ways of expressing it, so that just might have been his. But yeah, they were definitely still suspicious of him, so he was still on their list, and they decided to keep an eye on him. You know, so investigators asked Matt, like, okay, tell us what happened that night. You know, they were saying things like, did you guys get into a fight? Was anybody else there? They were really just asking all the questions they needed to ask to see if Matt could point them in the right direction. So he explained to the police that the last people that were there before him were his friends, Tori and Brian, but they had already left before him early to go see a movie. Matt also said that when he left the house, he called Tori and talked to him to see where they were, because he was trying to see if they could hang out or whatever afterwards. But Matt says on the phone, Tori answered, but he could barely hear them because they were in the movie. And he was just, like, trying to, like, whisper on the phone. So the next day, Matt says that him and Tori did end up hanging out at Matt's house. And this is when Matt says he tried to call Cassie, like, the whole weekend, but he could never get a hold of her. So then investigators know, okay, obviously now we have to question these two guys, Brian and Tori, to figure out who they were and what their story was. Side note too, it's odd to me that Matt tried to call Cassie the whole weekend, and if she wasn't answering, why he wouldn't ask his mom to drive him back to the house to make sure she was okay.
That's what I was thinking, especially in the way he left her. Already scared, right? Something fishy was going on.
Right, like clearly something was happening. Even if it was just the power, like, she was clearly scared, so he should have, like, drove up there to check on her, but I don't know.
Or call her grandma, like, hey, did Cassie make it home?
Right, anything. So once they kind of investigators started looking into Brian and Tori and just their lives and like everything about them, they learned that both Brian and Tori like were basically like aspiring like filmmakers. Like they loved making different kinds of like movies or like vlogs and like stuff like that. They would constantly film themselves, film their days. You know, they wanted to make movies. They were like big movie buffs. They talked about it with everybody and like that was their thing. And their big thing was they always watched anything horror related. Like horror was their favorite genre. They just loved to watch scary movies and watch anything scary movie related. Brian, he seemed like he was the more like outgoing one between him and Tori. It was said that Brian had a really big crush on Cassie, but she was not interested in him. And she obviously had a boyfriend, Matt, at the time. But they were still, you know, friendly. He was kind of bummed that she didn't like him like he liked her, but like everything seemed, you know, pretty copious between them. Like they seemed fine. Now, another thing about Brian too was he considered himself a loser and an outcast. Like he considered himself this. He said he had a really hard time fitting in high school. And super weird, he had like a very strange obsession with the Columbine shooting, like the school shooting. And he like idolized the guy that did it because he said that they represented the outcasts and the people that nobody paid attention to. They got their revenge. And Brian said that he wanted to do something like them. He wanted to be great like they were. Okay. Big fat red flags, right?
Absolutely. It's kind of like the real life. I know you said Scream was inspired, but I feel like it is like the real life. Two guys from the first one.
Yeah.
I can't even think of their names right now. Matthew Lillard and Skeet Ulrich.
Yeah. No, for real. Super similar. But yeah, so I feel like when investigators heard that, they probably were like, okay, they're definitely our main focus right now. So Brian considered Tori like one of his good friends, like if not one of his best friends. So investigators questioned both Brian and Tori. I mean, obviously they had to because they were both at the house. They explained that they were at the house, but they thought it was going to be like a house party when they got there. And when they did get there and they realized it wasn't, they decided to leave and go to the movies because watching a movie at the house was boring. And they thought, let's go see a new movie at the theater. And like we do that instead, I guess. And both of the boys had movie ticket stubs to see the movie Holes showing. So that was like their quote proof, I guess, that they went to the movies. Basically saying like, you know, oh, we did go to the movie theater that night. See, we have these tickets, which kind of reminds me, side note too, of the Menendez brothers, that like how they tried buying movie tickets as like their alibi or whatever. Obviously it didn't work out for them, but yeah, so their story was that they went to the movies. So then 2 days later, police brought in Matt, Tori, and Brian again for questioning. They really didn't have many leads and they thought, okay, Matt's not showing any type of emotion, so let's bring him in and question him a little bit more. And obviously he was the last person there. They thought the boys are just kind of suspicious and they obviously both were at that house the night that it happened as well. So those were their three main people of interest. So they bring Matt in for a polygraph test to see if maybe they can get something out of him. They ask Matt, you know, did you have anything to do with the murder of Cassie? And Matt says no. And he completely passes the polygraph test with like flying colors. So And I'm sure they asked him a lot more questions, and his story probably seemed to check out. And they talked to his mom as well, saying that she picked him up at this time and he was at home and, you know, he called Tori and all that stuff. So investigators kind of decide to take a little bit of a step back on Matt. And they're like, okay, let's shift our focus more onto Brian and Tori. So then they question Brian and they ask him, what did you do that night? And Brian repeated to the investigators that he went to the movies. So the investigators were like, okay, well, what movie did you see? And Brian says like, oh, it was some like scary movie. I can't even remember the name of it right now. And then investigators were like, okay, well, do you remember like what the movie was about? And Brian was like, I don't really even remember. I just remember that it was boring. And so they're also like, do you remember who was in the movie? Like any stars, or do you remember any significant detail about the movie? And he's like, no, I just like, I can't remember anyone's name right now. I can't even remember what happened. I just remember thinking the whole time that it was such a boring movie and I didn't want to be there. So investigators are like, these are super basic questions about a movie you just saw not that long ago. And if you just watched a movie, wouldn't you know like something to say about it?
You would think, at least the freaking title.
Yeah, exactly. And Brian doesn't know anything, like any of these answers to anything. And obviously, investigators also thought it was weird. I mean, it's weird on its own, but they thought it was definitely weird because both Brian and Tori like claim to be these like big movie critics and like are all about movies. And they would just brag about how they're like movie connoisseurs and everything. So like there's definitely like a huge red flag, like, okay, so you're this big movie buff, but you don't even remember any single detail about a movie you just went to go see.
Right.
So then investigators, they decide to go down to the movie theater to find out who was working that night at the ticket booth. So they come across this girl who was working the ticket booth that Friday night, and they asked her if she knew Brian and Tori. They had like pictures of them and everything. And the girl working was like, oh yeah, I know them. I go to school with them. So then investigators were like, oh, okay. Well, did they come to the movies on Friday night? And the girl who was working the ticket booth was like, no, I did not see them. And she said, I would remember seeing them because I was letting everybody in. And obviously she knew them. So when she said this, they were like, okay, they're definitely lying about something because they were not at the movies. So now on September 27th, 2006, 5 days after the murder, Brian comes into the investigator's office to be questioned again. And right away, they know that Brian is acting super weird. He seems like more quiet than he was before and like just more reserved, a little bit upset. And as soon as Brian sits down, he immediately starts to cry. And this, you know, kind of like gets the investigators like a little excited because they're like, oh, sweet, this is exactly what you need. Like he's about to crack and like give us all the info. So Brian tells investigators at one point, when they're all watching the movie at Cassie's house, Brian says that he told them that he was going to go use the bathroom. But really, he went down to the basement and unlocked the back door. So he told investigators that he and Tori, they just wanted to scare Matt and Cassie, and they were going to play a prank on them. They told Cassie and Matt that they were leaving to go to the movies. But really, they left the house and then they went around in the backyard. They put these creepy, like almost like clown-like face masks on, and they put black clothing on. They brought knives, and he says they did it to make their prank more realistic, basically. It's like a fucked up prank, honestly, if that's really what the intention was.
Well, I mean, a prank, you stop yourself after a certain point. Once it's murder, it's murder. It's not really a prank anymore.
Exactly. Like, takes a little bit of a further turn there. So after they put their, like, disguise on or whatever, they went through the unlocked basement door that he had unlocked earlier. And then, obviously, it led them into the basement. And Brian and Tori were just down there hanging out for a little bit, trying to, I guess, wait for the perfect moment to scare them. And then that's when they started messing with the circuit box and they turned the power off in the house. They thought it would be funny to turn the power on and off like in the movie Scream. So they were just thinking it would be funny to freak them out in that way. Now, they thought that Matt and Cassie would kind of like go downstairs and like try to get the power back on or like walk around the house. And then that's when they were going to pop out and like scare them. But then he goes on to say that they turn the power like back half on. Like if you remember, only part of the power came back on. And then Matt left the house. That's when his mom came to pick him up. So they thought, okay, well, let's just continue with the prank and scare Cassie and turn the power back off again. So they thought for sure, he says, that this time Cassie's going to come downstairs into the basement and check the circuit box. And then when she would come downstairs, that's when we're going to scare her. But Cassie obviously never came downstairs. Like I had said, she stayed in the living room on the couch. Because, like, honestly, same, that's what I would have done, too. You would not have caught me in that basement if the power went off. Like, no way, Jose. But, yeah, so she stayed in the living room. Brian says that Tori started to get super amped up. And he was, like, saying over and over again that he just had to do it. He had to kill her. Let's do it. Let's do it. And just go up there and kill her. So Brian says that both of them went up the stairs. They went to find Cassie. And Brian says Tori is the one who attacked her. And he was the one stabbing her over and over again. And Brian says that he never touched Cassie. It was all Tori. Brian says that he was just there, but it was all Tori. And it was just supposed to be a prank, scaring them, but then Tori turned it into murdering Cassie. However, after more questioning over time, Brian did end up admitting that he stabbed Cassie 3 or 4 times because Tori told him to, and he was just afraid of Tori because of how like crazy and amped up he was getting. So Brian says he stabbed her because he was scared of Tori. He says once Cassie was dead, Brian and Tori gathered up all of their evidence. They put it in a bag and they took it to a wooded area to bury it. So then Brian ends up taking investigators where they had hidden the evidence and like buried it. So when investigators ended up getting the evidence back, they saw that it was filled with a bunch of things. Like there were stick matches, a pair of rubber gloves, a pair of black boots, workout gloves, like the fingerless ones, melted brown hydrogen peroxide bottle. There were the like creepy masks that they wore. There was a large dagger knife, and there were just like a tons of knives, like large knife, silver knife, small one. There were a lot of them. There also was a Sony videotape. So a VHS tape was there. Investigators watched these tapes, and you'll never guess what were on the tapes. But like I had said, Tori and Brian were like vloggers, or they were trying to be vloggers. So they decided to videotape the whole process. So on these tapes, or like these vlogs that they made, they were taking you with around like their whole day that the murder took place. In the videos, they were sitting down and they were writing out how they were going to kill somebody that day. And they were talking to the camera, both saying that they picked Cassie to kill and how that they're sorry to her family, but they, quote, had to do it. Cassie has to die, end quote. Oh my God. Yeah. On the two tapes, you can also see the boys driving around and they're talking about how excited they are to kill somebody. Brian is the one who's like, I'm so excited. We're going to kill someone. They had themselves like both very hyped up. And then Tori is not in the frame, but he says, quote, I'm horny just thinking about it, quote, which is just disgusting. Like talking about killing her. There is video footage of this out. I don't believe the whole tapes are available, but they're literally just on YouTube. The two boys, like I said, filmed their whole day leading up to the murder, and then they also filmed after the murder. So they did not videotape the actual murder itself, but it was like, you know, pretty freaking clear to everybody that this whole thing was premeditated, because this whole like footage of the entire process for them.
Well, that was Brian's little sad story. I didn't want to do this prank.
Exactly. Like that just killed your story. And he's the one that led them to the evidence. So I don't know how he thought that was going to work out in his favor.
And why would you record your whole day? Like, I've seen movies where people do this, where they someone constantly has the video camera going, like the entire horror movie, and I'm like, you're so freaking stupid. Like,
right?
Oh my god!
Yeah, I don't
get caught.
Because it's like, were they just keeping it for their own personal like use? But then they buried it anyways. So like, I don't get what the point of that was.
They're idiots.
Yeah, very much so. But yeah, so there's like a lot of video footage, but in one part you can hear them explaining, how they're outcasts and how they want to go down in history, like Ted Bundy or the Roadside Strangler, talking about how they needed to kill more people and earn their spotlight alongside like big serial killers. And you just like hear them openly talking about all of this. It's just so psychotic. So now on tape, they see that these two boys were planning to do this. Like, obviously, they see the whole process. They see that it was not an accident or like a prank gone wrong. And it wasn't just one of the boys. It was premeditated and it was planned. And they had literally all the evidence that they needed. When Tori was being investigated, he said that he just went along for the ride. Like, he thought it was just going to be a joke. He didn't know that anybody was actually going to die. Basically, he was just saying, like, for the vlogging thing, like, I thought we were just joking around, like, talking about killing somebody. Like, I didn't think somebody was actually going to get killed. And then we got there and, like, Brian just started, like, killing her. Like he just basically said the same thing Brian said. So they're just both pointing the finger at each other. But obviously, after reviewing the tapes, investigators saw that both of them seemed to take equal parts in this. You know, and obviously, since they both have different versions of what happened, nobody really knows except for them who stabbed Cassie. But based off of all their like footage, you could just tell it was both of their idea and they were both on board to do this.
They're both just sociopaths and psychopaths and...
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So on September 27th, both of the boys were arrested. Again, they were still pointing fingers at each other. And, you know, Tori stuck to his story saying, I didn't kill her. Brian's the one who killed her. I thought we were just making like a movie and joking around. I was just there. And then, you know, Brian saying that it was all a joke and Tori's the one who actually killed her. So it was just a mess. But actually, Brian did, like I had said before, did admit to stabbing her 3 to 4 times. Tori never admitted to stabbing her. There was also evidence found of Brian and Tori purchasing knives at a pawn shop. There's video footage shown of them going to the pawn shop, and one of the knives that they purchased was used to kill Cassie. So it was just like even more proof that like obviously the whole thing was premeditated. So in trial, both Brian and Tori didn't really have a defense, obviously. Like, I feel like this is kind of like a case closed situation. Both just continued to point the blame on one another and tried to explain the videotape as best as they could in their like twisted version. So their defense was that it was all acting. They were just making their own horror film and it wasn't real. The main point of difference was that Brian actually, like I said, confessed to stabbing Cassie, and Tori never confessed to stabbing her or harming her in any way. And obviously none of that was on video. So in Tori's trial, they stuck to the evidence that was found, which Cassie's DNA was found on one knife, one shirt, and one glove, and all those items were worn by Brian. They also said that four different male DNA evidence was found under Cassie's right hand fingernails, and two male DNA evidence was found on her left hand. According to specialists, Brian's DNA was found on both Cassie's right and left hand, but Tori's DNA was not found, like not under her nails. Another thing was the videotape you hear after the murder had taken place, that Brian is the one who's yelling, "I killed Cassie," like he's yelling it excitedly. And you don't hear Tori really say much about it or anything at all, really. You know, you don't hear him say like, "I killed Cassie" or anything like that. So Tori's team definitely used that in his defense, saying that it proved that Tori had nothing to do with it and it was all Brian. But both Brian and Tori were convicted and sentenced to life in prison for first-degree murder without the possibility of parole, and also 30 years to life for conspiracy to commit first-degree murder. Shortly after both teens were convicted, they both immediately tried to appeal it. Brian argued that there were several violations in the case and the trial. He said that in his fourth interview before he was arrested, his parents were not present, so Brian believed that any information from that interview should have been suppressed just because he was underage. However, the court found that everything that was done in the interview was done correct. So Brian was told his Miranda rights before he was even questioned. He signed a waiver saying that he was going to be read his Miranda rights before being questioned, and he didn't appear to be, you know, in any type of vulnerable state or like tired or upset or anything during the interview. And when the interview was happening, Brian didn't like stop and ask for his parents. And he didn't stop to ask for a break or anything like that. So with all that being said, the court determined that Brian knowingly and willingly signed the waiver, which then petitioned his right to counsel. So his appeal was denied. And Tori's appeal, because he made one as well, it was focused on the fact that he never admitted to stabbing Cassie. He also focused on the videotape itself, saying that you never hear him admitting that he killed Cassie or did anything to Cassie. Tori said that he pretended to be high in the video and never said anything that actually proved he was in the house or a part of it. So Tori focused on ineffective counsel, saying that his rights had been violated due to his counsel not moving to suppress evidence resulting from allegedly deficient warrant. So pretty much according to that, because they went to his house to look through Tori's stuff during like investigations and stuff, and the warrant itself didn't specify like authority to seize any computers or electronics from his home, but they ended up doing it anyways. And when investigators searched Tori's computer, they found evidence of child pornography and animal cruelty on his computer.
Oh my God.
Mm-hmm. But pretty much what Tory was saying in his appeal was that the evidence that was found under the warrant should have been suppressed because the warrant itself did not state that his computers could be taken. Legally, I get that, but like, whatever, dude. Like, these are tiny little issues. You're still...
Yeah, like, do you really want to talk about what's on your computer?
Exactly.
Want to go there?
Right, because that's a whole other issue going on. But, you know, the court disagreed and his appeal was also denied. Now, as far as Cassie's family, obviously they were completely heartbroken at the loss of her. And they knew that Tori and Brian were responsible for it, but it really made them quite frustrated when the two of them wouldn't take full responsibility for what they had done to her. And also that they were trying to appeal and like get out of their sentencing. You know, and with her family, like it wasn't Cassie that was just harmed in this. Like her whole family was grieving very hard at her loss. No surprise. Specifically her aunt, uncle, and cousin, the ones who owned the house, they really suffered a lot after this. So Cassie's 13-year-old cousin, the one that found her in the living room, she was extremely traumatized. And it sadly like really sent her into a dark depression and she tried to commit suicide. And then Cassie's aunt, she also fell into a deep depression. She lost her job and she just really struggled to make sense of it all. And she just felt like responsible for everything that happened, which obviously she was not. Like there was no way that she would have known that this was going to happen. But I get, you know, she probably just felt that way because it was her house and she asked her to stay there and all of that. But yeah, just so sad. And her aunt and uncle, they really just wanted out of this house. They did not want to live there anymore just because it was a reminder every day of the horrible thing that happened there. So they were trying to sell the house for years. Like they had put it up every year and nobody was buying it because no one wanted to like buy the home with, that had such a terrible crime happen in it. So it just sent the family into like a deeper spiral because they just couldn't escape it, really. It was just like a constant reminder, like living in that house, which is so sad. Like I wish somebody would have bought it. But at the same time, I get it because I wouldn't want to buy a house for something like that happened. But I don't know. So it wasn't long after their case would be brought back up because in 2012, the Supreme Court in Idaho ruled that mandatory life sentences are unconstitutional for juvenile defenders, even in murder cases. So this decision left a lot of people wondering if Brian and Tori would get their sentences overturned or reduced. They also were in a documentary in 2013 called Lost for Life. You can watch it on YouTube. It's just pretty much about life in prison and how nobody under the age of 18 should be given a sentence of life in prison. It kind of focuses on how it shouldn't be a thing. So that's just what that documentary is about. And like I said, Tori and Brian were both interviewed in it as well. In the documentary, it shows Brian who he shows a lot of remorse and like he seems like genuine, taking full responsibility for what he did. And he says he like came to realize and accept that he killed somebody who was a friend. And like he says he's in debt to Cassie and her family. And he accepts the fact that he probably won't be getting out of prison. And he just kind of cries a lot in it and seems very remorseful, which I hope that he is, but I don't necessarily, not even, I just don't feel bad for him or like particularly like moved by his story because he knows what he did was wrong. Like you killed somebody and you like videotaped it and it was just very planned out. So yeah, I don't feel bad for him.
No, nobody does.
No. Especially too, they had a list of other people that they wanted to kill. Like, they weren't just wanting to kill one person. They wanted to kill a bunch of people. So yeah, obviously there's something psychologically wrong with both of them.
Yeah, like, dude.
Now, right, it's just really sick. They also, like I said, interviewed Tori in the documentary, and his take on it is very different than Brian's. So where Brian, you know, takes responsibility and feels very remorseful, or like says that he feels very remorseful, at least, Tori, on the other hand, still to this day, does not take any responsibility for what he did, like, at all. He says that he still has nothing to do with it. And the whole time he's being interviewed, his family's there with him, like his mom and dad, and they're acting like Tori is the victim in this situation, saying that he would never do what he's being accused of. They did not once bring up Cassie and how her family is feeling, like what they've been through. Instead, they just talked about how Tori is 100% innocent and he's the victim in this because he's being locked up for no reason. So yeah, just kind of stupid. Like,
you might as well just own it because your kid did it. And I mean, at this point, this is probably why they are the way they are. They were probably cleaning up the messes from these kids their whole lives.
Right.
And getting them out of trouble and gave them too much freedom. And I don't know. I'm not judging as parents. I'm not trying to say how they parented is wrong. Maybe they were great parents and these kids were just, something just wasn't right with them, but you don't plan all this and videotape it and lay in a dark basement and just the whole thing. It's just psychotic. Like, it's sick.
Right. And like, even if Tori was actually not fully innocent, but like innocent, like he says, you know, like if he wasn't there for the murder part or if he had no part in killing her, like he still talked about it in the like video and still did like planning parts of it. And he still had like this child pornography and animal abuse videos on his computer. So I would say he's like still no angel.
Oh no, absolutely. Yeah, no, there's yeah, obviously something wrong with him. And yeah, you know, if he was as innocent as he's making it sound, and even if the videos were just for fun, saying we were going to kill her, but weren't going to, you could have walked away at any given time. You could have, you know, the first time you stabbed her, you could have ran and called 911. You know what I mean? There's like so many things, like,
right. Or even like the same night when you go home, you could tell your parents what happened and then you can go to the police department and like let them know. And it's like, yeah, he played a huge part in this, and it's just shitty that he takes no responsibility for it.
Oh, absolutely.
So yeah, that is the story. Our hearts definitely go out to Cassie's family because she was just a good person. She was a good teen. All she wanted was to make good grades, save up enough money for a car, and just, you know, live a normal teenage life. And these two psychos took all of that and more away from her. So it's just disgusting.
This is very giving vibes of the girls that killed her friends in the park or in the woods. Yes. Just to do it, you know, like,
yeah, it's just,
Understand. Like, you get bored. So you're like, I wonder what it's like to kill someone. So, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, these people have serious, serious issues if that's their thought process. Like, there's so many things to do when you're bored. That would be the absolute last thing on my mind to do. Like, what?
Shit.
Oh my gosh. Definitely mental health needed there.
Well, yeah, I hope they never get out. I'm sorry. I know they say like, oh, as kids, you shouldn't be, you know, convicted to life. But you know what? You were growing up when you took a life and you took a life. So I feel like you need to give up your life now. I mean, an eye for an eye.
Yeah, exactly. And they weren't like young kids. Like they were older teenagers. They knew, they absolutely knew what they were doing was wrong.
Right. Oh, for sure. And I feel for Cassie's family and Cassie's boyfriend. And, you know, because I'm sure he's got regret. Like, why didn't I go back? I left her. I should have convinced her to leave. Like all the things, you know.
Oh, for sure. And,
you know, her family, they're stuck with this house. I mean, hopefully maybe by now they sold it. But, you know, her cousin, she lost a cousin who I'm sure she was, if she was 13, Cassie would say 17. I'm sure they had a bond. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, like, again, she's going through all that, having to be the one to find her. And it's just like, oh my gosh, the whole thing. Because two boys were bored, you know?
Mm-hmm. So gross.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was basically the Scream-inspired story for today. So yeah, thanks guys for sticking around and listening to it. We appreciate it.
Thanks for delivering it.
No prob. And yeah, we will be back again with a new story next week.
Sounds like a good plan to me. Now we just got to find this story.
Right? Can't wait. Can't wait to hear what it will be.
I'll come up with something. I'll get that little tinker going.
I'm excited.
Crystal never knows what I'm going to come up with. I always call her with like, hey.
I love it.
Oh my gosh. I am so cold.
Michigan.
I know, right? So I am probably going to go downstairs and maybe sit by the fire. I'm going to finish watching Love is Blind. I started season 7.
Nice. I did start it too after you texted me. I'm only on like episode 2 though, so I'm probably much behind. Okay.
Well, then we'll talk some more. I know I accidentally found a spoiler alert because it was on my news when I opened up my Google and I'm like, no! Dang it. Now I know stuff, but
that's the worst.
I'm gonna continue watching, and then maybe by next week, if we're both caught up, we can give our little opinion piece.
We'll dish on it.
Who's your favorite so far? Do you know yet, or is it just still too soon? Well, it's still episode 2.
Yeah, it's still way too soon. I wouldn't even know their names at this point.
Yeah,
still.
People haven't even really coupled up yet. Okay, so we have to wait because yeah, okay.
Don't worry, I will definitely have an opinion on it though.
Sounds good. So, all right, well then we need to go so we can go watch our Love is Blind separately.
Right? We can catch up and dish on it.
Right? Well, have a good night.
Yes, guys, have a great night and thanks for listening.
And stay creepy, right?
Yep, always.
All right, we got to go.
Bye.
Bye.